A lot of summer activities, and it's always good to get out and enjoy them. But we're indoors talking about Latin and Greek. The thing about Greek language is that if you study classical Greek, it's not going to help you a whole lot in modern Greece, is it?
That's very, very true. And I've taken students from Purdue now 5 or 6 times to Greece, and it actually hinders me this and hinders those students of mine who have studied ancient Greek. The not only is the vocabulary obviously very different, but the pronunciations are different. So, for instance, the diphthongs, the combinations of two vowels that together make a single sound. Those become a vowel and a consonant in modern Greek, and that's very disconcerting if you've read and worked in the ancient language for a while, because you have to kind of remind yourself that, for instance, in what's essentially an EU diphthong, an O sound in ancient Greek becomes F, like an EF in modern Greek, and it creates all kinds of difficulties.
Well, we have trouble with Oedipus, because in this country it said Oedipus, in England it said Oedipus, and if you talk to a Greek, they call it Oedipus. And I think, come on, give me a break. But we settled on Oedipus because the OE combination is in Phoenix and Phoebe and fetus, and so it seems to me that's the way it ought to be. And Enus, the god of wine. Is that more correct?
Well, it's interesting because the name in ancient Greek is with an omicron and an iota, so it's oid. That's where the oid comes from.
Oig.
Yeah, oid. Yeah, that's where the oi sound comes from. But I always tell students too that when they're pronouncing, even, I mean, something that's lifted directly from Greek, like the name Oedipus, or some word that comes directly from Latin or Greek. Pronunciations will vary depending upon whether a person has actually studied the ancient language. And one of the sort of very basic example that I give in my etymology courses is the word alumni. Well, alumni is lifted directly from Latin, and the spelling Alumni would actually be alumni in classical Latin. And alumni to somebody that studied classical Latin is Alumnae, which actually means women who have come from an institution. So you should, I tell people to hesitate before they mock someone or criticize someone for their mispronunciation, because it may be that they're pronouncing something in a set way because they know a bit more about the actual language that it comes from than you do. And so there are multiple ways of translating things, kind of depending upon people's backgrounds.
Well, even the meaning of words gets turned around. One that I've noticed when I was a kid is scan. Scan used to mean read very closely to scan something, and now it means just to skip through. And I think, now, wait a minute. You can use the same word to convey a totally different meaning. And that doesn't seem right somehow or other. Shouldn't we agree on what the darn word means? And that, of course, that's where Tweet and I, Roll Tweet, my good buddy, and I get into arguments all the time. But when you're dealing with something that has been around for a long time, and the fascinating thing about Latin, it was the way learned people conversed up until just a few hundred years ago. Shakespeare went to school in Stratford when he was a kid, and he learned Latin and Greek. And you try to put Latin and Greek into elementary schools today, you're going to be in trouble. But he learned Ovid in Latin and loved it all his life and used it in his plays. But you think maybe we should be taking another language in elementary school, because when the mind is forming and language is forming, a kid can do almost anything. You can take a baby can grow up into any language at all. And so if you want your child to learn a different language, take him to a different country and let him play for a few weeks, and it's amazing what he can pick up.
I agree. I agree completely.
Yeah, but we don't immerse ourselves in language, and English is beginning to just crawl all over the world. If you want to do business, you have to speak English, which infuriates the French. That used to be the international language. But English has muscled everything out of the way. But even English changes rapidly from generation to generation.
We're always excited when the new words come out that are going to enter the dictionary, and do we know them all? I'm starting to get to that age where I'm no longer hip enough to recognize what the new words are.
Oh, yeah. That's bad, man. You think, wait, is it? No, you mean good. I see.
Exactly.
But tricks with language, it just goes on and on and on. And you say that, you talk about finally getting a Latin teacher back in school, but a friend told me that in Cincinnati, high school has 4 Latin teachers.
Well, it's interesting because I lived in Cincinnati for a number of years. 2 of my children were born there, and I taught actually middle school Latin in Cincinnati. I went to graduate school there, but I taught at the Seven Hills School in Cincinnati, and Cincinnati is a place where Latin is really valued. And the public high school, you might be talking about Walnut Hills High School. They're marvelous public high schools that have all levels of Latin, and the students are fabulous. I sat in on some classes at the public high school there, Walnut Hills High School, and was incredibly impressed by the level at which they were learning the language.
You know, and how does, we talk about public education, and it serves the public and is one of the glories of our democracy. But you go from one community to another, and what is taught in public schools undergoes a shift. And I wonder, is that the right way to do it? Should there be some kind of, if not a statewide standard, a national standard, what ought to be taught, what a person getting a decent education should know?
That's a really, really good question. I mean, nobody questions whether or not the high school needs to have a strong math program or even a strong, English or writing program. But it's those things like foreign languages and music that are often pushed off to the side. And I think they're among the absolute most vital for developing, educated and culturally, mm-hmm. culturally astute and just for the human element, to know music. Music programs are cut much like foreign language programs are cut. And I'm really thankful and lucky that my children have grown up in West Lafayette in the Purdue, under the shadow of Purdue University, because they really insist and make sure that those music programs are very, very well funded and they're not going to go anywhere.
Yeah, if you don't have solid music, music goes away.
But foreign language is very much like that. I mean, they're often the programs that seem to get dropped, or they're inconsequential or they're tangential to what's really vital. And I would argue that both of those things are incredibly vital to being a well-rounded and an educated person.
It's it's interesting too that there is an interest in reviving languages that are on the point of vanishing. Cornish is being re-examined. Welsh has made a good comeback. Gaelic. And there are obscure languages in the British Isles where people are trying to revive them. But beyond that, people are creating languages. J.R.R. Tolkien created Elvish to the point that at one time students were keeping their class notes in Elvish. And I thought, wait a minute, how does that work? Why the interest in creating languages?
I think it would be a very tricky, fun game. I mean, you think of something like the Jabberwocky. You know, 'twas brillig and the slithy toves did gyre and gimble in the wabe. All mimsy were the borogroves and the mome raths outgrabe.
Words to live by.
It's marvelous. But I mean, it's really good stuff. And you can talk about language from a kind of removed, higher up kind of vantage point with something like the Jabberwocky, because you don't know what any of those words mean, but you can tell how they fit grammatically, which ones must be adverbs, which ones must be verbs, which one is the noun. The momraths are that's a noun. Yes. You know, and you don't know what a momrath is, but you know that it's a noun.
I know them when I see them, Liz.
but those, I mean, those playful things like that with creating languages can really be a marvelous way of looking at the structure of language and understanding, you know, the underlying underpinnings of what's required in terms of learning a language and in terms of speaking a language and creating a language. I think I love things like that. I love
My kids used to fascinate me. I've talked before about this. I think it was daughter Terry who was referring to a calipitter. And I thought, that sounds a little bit better than caterpillar. And when they, you know, you want a bet, instead of saying that, they'd say, how much you want to make a bet. It had a nice rhythm to it. But the way kids would use language, you know, you want to correct them, and yes, you'd think, well, now, wait a minute.
You know, I mourn. My middle son used to say concrete for concrete. Uh-huh. And it was a sad day when he suddenly said it correctly. I felt very, very melancholic. And we, at my house, we always play, and there are whole lists of words that we habitually mispronounce. People probably think that we have no idea, can't speak properly, but alligator, we never say alligator. We always say alligator.
Alligator.
Yeah, so... things like that are fun.
I always use calipitter. I prefer that.
I completely understand why.
Oh, yeah. It's but that whole business with language, and that's one of the miracles of the development of human beings. Animals speak in sentences. When a dog barks, it means something. There's an intruder. Or, look, there's a squirrel. But when... I think it was, his name just flew out of my head. I can see him. Did that wonderful TV series years and years ago. But he said something that really caught my attention, that something happened when the words fell out of sentences. And suddenly we could do all sorts of things with language. That in the sounds that early hominids made for certain things suddenly got to the point where they could be taken apart and shuffled around. And at that point, civilization had to take off like an airplane. And that is a sobering thought, you know, that when you look back and think, how did all this start? And how did it develop? And it didn't go from words into sentences. It went from sentences into words and then back into sentences. And we have this marvelously manipulative way of talking. I used to tell my speech students, when you speak, think of it as lighting a fire in another person's mind. These sounds go across, and the other person comprehends, and you can talk about something, a quality that you can't put your hands on, like friendship, and they understand what you mean. That's miraculous.
It is miraculous. I agree.
Yeah, so language is just awesome. But would people, do you think that people have a point when they say, well, why don't you let go of the old languages?
Absolutely not. I mean, I think your appreciation for the miraculousness of that comes from your appreciation that language has a history. Language has a history, and Latin specifically. I mean, the longevity of the Latin language is mind-blowing. And it's because you have an appreciation for the longevity of the language that you understand it you have all kind of kinds of insight that a person who doesn't think about that, all the different languages that come into play with the development of English, for instance. I mean, somebody who doesn't think about the language and its history lacks a lot of insight.
Well, you know, the Indo-European languages, you know, we talk about that as one of the primary trunks of language, and yet there seem to have been other original sources of languages that we don't, we haven't examined as carefully because they don't impact us as directly. And the whole business of searching out all the different languages that exist in the world, Lord of mercy, how could you possibly do that? And after all, what is the utility if the world is to come together and it better or will destroy one another? Maybe we have to have some kind of common language, as was the idea behind Esperanto when they wanted to build this artificial language that would satisfy everybody. Do you study Esperanto?
I have an Esperanto dictionary or two that I picked up. But, and I have a friend who studied it quite seriously for a while, but I remember being curious about it early in college and trying to find books on it, but I haven't thought about it much recently.
Do you speak Elvish?
No, I don't. I don't speak Elvish, but I'd like to learn. I'd certainly like to learn. When we were talking about just kind of the longevity of language, I went to graduate school in Cincinnati, and it's a heavy archaeology school. And I was my concentration was philology, which essentially means that I'm going to concentrate on the languages and the extant literature in Latin and Greek rather than ancient history or archaeology. And I had the good fortune, there was a Swedish archaeologist, and she was a specialist in Linear B, which is a proto-Greek, a proto-Greek language. And I actually had a semester of Linear B. And when I tell my classicist friends, they're rather amazed because it's very unusual to have had studied this proto-Greek language. But it's fascinating, and it's comprised of pictograms and syllables. So you combined syllable sounds together. And I remember that sesame goes all the way back to Linear B, sesame. And it's interesting because we were talking about all that languages can convey. And in Linear B, all of the tablets are nothing more than records, like the king's records of what was in the storehouses, how many pithoi of olive oil, or how many various different animals. And that was the limitation of how the language was used. There was no Linear B poetry or Linear B speeches or...
Well, you've blown me away. You're the only person I've ever met who studied Linear B, and I've looked at it and marveled at it, but... if Latin is hard for me, Linear B is just off the charts. Liz Mercier, I want to thank you so much. Roel Tweet and I are going to nail you about some old books because you are a fund of the kind of information we like to play with. But I must say I appreciate talking to you about Latin and Greek. And we talk about little Latin and less Greek. Boy, that's me. But I don't have Shakespeare's other gifts to compensate. Liz Mercier, Purdue University, is our guest today. Thanks again, Liz.
Thank you so much.
And that'll do it for now. I'll be back at noon with Roel Tweet. We'll scribble away for a while, then tonight at 9 for Swing Shift, and then 10 o'clock for Jazz After Hours. Carry your umbrella because the forecast is for isolated showers and thunderstorms after 4 p.m., high near 78. Only a 20% chance of precipitation, but boy, do the chances ramp up tonight and tomorrow night, up to 80 to 50%. 30% chance of showers on Monday. After that, it should clear off and warm up. So enjoy the week. Enjoy the weekend. It's right now trying to nudge up to 70 degrees on the campus of Augustana College. Saturday Morning Live is produced by Media Consultants Limited for Augustana Public Radio, Quad Cities NPR, WVIK, Rock Island. That's it. See you next week.